Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Today's Thursday, the 19th of October, and it's about 10:57 in the morning, and evidently something went wrong, because I thought that we had covered and were broadcasting in the first hour. Evidently, we were not. Okay, so I don't know how that happened. It just did, and so on, and so it goes. Now, let's just try to see if we can catch up with some of the things that have come into play. Bear with me a moment. One second here. Literally had no idea that this had taken place. So we'll just have to see what goes on. Bear with me a moment here. And, okay. One moment. Okay. Almost there. I'm sorry. Well, let's cover some international news. I guess the first is we'll go into the Middle East. Bear with me a moment if we can get there. So just bear with me as we move along. There is a lot of outrage in the Middle East over the Gaza hospital blast. Israel's neighbors are expressing shock after a deadly blast. Gaza hospital. The exact death toll cannot be verified. There were violent protests, and the situation in the region remains hostile. So even as Israel continues to deny blame for the deadly blast on Gaza's Al-Ahli hospital on Tuesday, the exact death toll, of which is disputed and cannot be independently verified, the incident has led to new outrage and condemnation of the Israeli military across the Middle East and North Africa. The situation is incredibly volatile, and the pictures of the suffering and the destruction of the Al-Ahli hospital are upsetting to the whole region. Simon Wolfgang Fuchs, the Associate Professor of Islamic and Middle Eastern Studies at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, advised. Fuchs said that some reaction to the attack by regional leaders were likely strategic. Quote, Arab politicians who work closely with Western states are under extreme pressure, which is why they immediately condemned the incident and blamed Israel, end quote. Egypt, for example, has been under increasing international pressure to open its Rafah border crossing with Gaza to allow aid in and refugees to flee. Immediately after the explosion at the hospital, Egypt's foreign ministry blamed Israel for the attack, accusing the country of a, quote, deliberate bombardment of civilians, end quote. Well, the days of airstrikes. Israel has bombarded the Gaza Strip as a direct response to an assault by the Hamas group, which is classified as a terror organization by the European Union, the United States, Germany, and other governments, that killed about 1,400 people. The militant Islamists also took scores of hostages back to Gaza. Well, Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip, says the hospital was destroyed in a strike by Israel Defense Forces. However, Israeli officials say the blast was caused by a rocket misfired within Gaza by the radical group Islamic Jihad, the organization, which collaborates with Hamas, immediately rejected any responsibility, saying he had reviewed video and audio material presented by the Pentagon. The United States President Joe Biden had told Hamas, saying that he had reviewed the video and audio material presented by the Pentagon. The U.S. President Joe Biden told the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Tel Aviv on Wednesday that, based on what I've seen, it appears as though it was done by the other team, not you. However, Biden added that a lot of people out there weren't sure what caused the blast. So on Tuesday, Jordan, which signed a peace treaty with Israel in 1994, canceled the planned four-way summit with Biden, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, and Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. War is pushing the region to the brink. Jordanian Foreign Minister Adnan al-Safadi said in a statement broadcast on national television, quote, Jordan will continue to work with everyone so that when the summit is held, it will be able to achieve what is required of it, which is to stop the war, deliver humanitarian support to the people of Gaza, and put an end to this crisis, al-Safadi had said. Abbas spoke of an appalling crime, quote unquote, and genocide, and said that countries that support Israel were responsible. Even as Abbas condemned the blast, West Bank demonstrators called for his resignation during a protest in Ramallah on Tuesday night. According to current opinion polls, if elections were held now, Abbas would lose to Ismail Haniyeh, the Qatar-based political leader of Hamas. In the past week, it has become clear that the Palestinian Authority has become irrelevant. Stephen Hoffner, head of the German Konrad Adenauer Foundation's office in Ramallah, advised. Despite the regional turmoil, Fuchs said there was cautious optimism that Tuesday's incident could lead to the calling off of Israel's looming ground offensive into Gaza, quote, or enable negotiations and a ceasefire and possibly also a release of the hostages, end quote. Pleas for a change in tactics are also coming from Israeli allies beyond the region. Quote, makes sense to notice that European Union officials as well as American officials are now moving from an unconditional support for Israel to calling for some constraint and prevent further violence and perhaps spillovers of the conflict in the region. Cynthia Bianco, a visiting fellow at the European Council on Foreign Affairs, advised, quote, Fuchs said, however, that the outrage would likely continue long after the combat had concluded. Quote, there are many people, especially on social media, who say even if we now come to a ceasefire, we will simply not forget what happened in the last few days, and the attacks on the hospital is only the tip of the iceberg, Fuchs had said. So let me just quickly look at this. Bear with me a moment. One second. This I thought you'll find very interesting. Six Roma people were Roma, are sometimes known as gypsies, but the right term to explain their ethnicity is Roma. So a record number of Roma were elected to parliament in, of all places, Slovakia. Six Roma were elected to Slovakia's new parliament on September 30. The highest number ever. Four of them are members of the Olano, O-L-A-N-O, and Friends Coalition, which has massive support in the Roma community. It was one of the biggest surprises of election night in Slovakia back on September 30. When the first results began popping up on television screens, the green of Slovakia's Olano and Friends Coalition kept appearing alongside the red of Robert Fico's victorious SMER, S-M-E-R party, and the blue of the second-placed pro-European Union progressive Slovakia. Before the election, the anti-corruption of Olano party, a former Prime Minister Igor Matovic, had joined forces with a number of smaller parties to form the Olano and Friends Coalition. When all the votes were counted, it had come away with almost 9% of the vote and was the fourth largest grouping in parliament. And this was far more than most polls had predicted in the run-up to the election. Another surprise was that a record 6 Roma had been elected to the 150-seat Slovak parliament. 4 of the 6 belonged to Olano and Friends, 2 to the largest opposition party, Progressive Slovakia. Olano has, or rather was, particularly successful in the east of the country, where a large number of Roma live. Indeed, both politicians and media alike were surprised at the level of support for the party within the country's second largest ethnic minority after the Hungarians. Matovic won by a huge majority in the Roma settlements, and in some places he got more than 90% of the vote, wrote the Eastern Slovak Daily Kolma. Well, in Lomnica, a settlement in central Slovakia, which is home to over 3,000 Romani people, over 92% voted for Olano, wrote Korzar. Other party got 3% of the vote at most. And according to the news portal Aktuality.sk, Olano triumphed in over 40 communities with a Roma majority. There is no evidence of fraud. Straight after the election, the Slovak police investigated whether electoral fraud or bribes had been behind the phenomenal results. There have been in the past been attempts to buy Roma votes. However, over 2 weeks after the election, no evidence of such fraud has been presented. Matovic called the allegations absurd, quote, "We just ran a good campaign," end quote, he told Slovak media. The Roma settlement and relocation. Olano's campaign was well received in Strelnice, a Roma settlement built by the Slovak state 10 years ago for the resettlement of Roma from Lepanovski Mlin, a village situated right beside the Slovak Paradise National Park, and both politicians felt the village was hampering economic development in the region. Although living standards in the brick bungalow settlement of Strelnice are poor by Slovak standards, there are asphalt sidewalks, 2 shops, a playground, and a church. The community center is under construction, and a bus stops there 3 times a day. There's forced settlement and recent improvements. When the communist regime forced the Roma to settle permanently after World War II, many were settled in this region. Indeed, most of Slovakia's approximately 500,000 Roma live in these parts. The majority live in slum-like settlements at a distance from villages and towns populated by non-Roma Slovaks. Nevertheless, says Valerie, a Romani nurse who moved from Letanovsky Mlin to Strelnice 10 years ago, quote, "We were lucky. It's much better here. There is water, electricity, sanitation. We live like people here." Igor Matovic and Olano are extremely popular in Strelnice. Matovic was the only prime minister who did anything for us Roma over the past and last 10 years, 30-year-old Martin told Deutsche Welle before the election. Well, support for Slovakia's poorest. It's not just a feeling, it's a fact that Igor Matovic's government helped the poorest population groups, most of whom are Roma. Slovak sociologist Michel Vasetsky told Deutsche Welle, the increase in child benefit from 30 to 60 euros per child starting this year will definitely make a difference to Roma families, he added. And Valerie confirms this. Child benefit was increased. That's an important source of income, end quote. But it's a marginalized community. As in many other European countries, there are hardly any opportunities for Slovak Roma to break out of the cycle of poverty into which they have been forced by centuries of systematic marginalization and neglect. In early 2023, the European Commission concluded that Slovakia does far too little for the integration of Roma. In no other country in the European Union is segregation in the school system so marked. Entire schools are attended by Roma children only. In many cases, these schools are more poorly equipped than those for Slovak children who do not come from a Romani background, and many Roma children are put in classes for children with learning disabilities and difficulties. Without the education they need, these Roma have even fewer chances as adults to find work on the labor market, where they are already at a disadvantage due to their ethnicity. Or the attitudes to the Roma in Slovak politics. But support for Olano is not just a matter of money and benefits. Another reason for his party's popularity is the fact that, unlike other Slovak politicians, Matovic never spoke ill of the Roma community. Stirring up anti-Roma sentiment was long seen in popular circles as a surefire way of attracting votes. Politicians from the ultra-right People's Party, Our Slovakias, for example, once described Roma as parasites and monkeys. In 2019, Robert Fico, who won this year's election, publicly sprang to the defense of the LSNS politician, that's the ultra-right People's Party, Our Slovakia, who was fired for making anti-Zyganist statements during a radio interview. Are we now supposed to be afraid of openly saying that the Roma are exploiting our social welfare system? Fico asked in a video posted on Facebook. Under Fico's leadership, social welfare payments were drastically cut. Even though the Roma community was not one of the central election campaign issues in 2023, Roma are still seen above all as a problem. Politicians in general, however, tend not to see them as potential supporters, even though they make up about 9% of the population. Pasi Vale Roma is a Roma organization that is active within Orlano and friends. It uses slogans like Roma, Slovakia's unused potential, something that even those politicians who focus on the interests of the Roma community rarely say. Olano was also the first party to have a Roma member of parliament, Peter Polak, back in 2012. According to Michal Vasetska, Slovakia's Roma have started to recognize the power of votes over the past 10 years. We now have Roma mayors in over 40 Slovak villages, he says. So some change in awareness. And this is very, very interesting as well when it comes to Slovaks. A far-right Slovak lawmaker has criticized the legislation that says the patrols keep a public transport safe, but Slovakia's justice minister has warned no one can replace the police. Slovakia's parliament on Tuesday banned patrols on trains that target the Roma community, Europe's poorest and largest minority. The legal amendment comes in response to members of the far-right People's Party, Our Slovakia, LSNS, irregularly patrolling trains after a 21-year-old girl was assaulted and robbed earlier this year. Quote, no one can replace the police in this country, and no one should act like it either, Justice Minister Lucia Zidnanska advised a local TASR news agency. The law states that law enforcement agents and train operators are responsible, quote, for public order and protection of rights, lives, property, and the health of the commuters, end quote. However, LSNS said it would continue to patrol trains, adding that it is looking at expanding its operations in other parts of the former communist state. Quote, people in eastern Slovakia are being terrorized. by asocial parasites, said lawmaker Milan Mazurek, who is in charge of the patrols during a parliamentary debate on the legislation, quote, when the trolls are on trains, all passengers behave better. We do not have to use force so far. Our presence is enough, Mazurek later told Reuters news agency LSNS, entered parliament for the first time this year, riding on a wave of anti-migration sentiment in the Eastern European nation. The party's support stood at 8.3% in September when it launched a petition for a referendum to leave the European Union and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. Slovakia has a population of 5.4 million people, with Roma accounting for some 300,000 of that figure. So that's one of the problems. Now, okay, bear with me a moment. One second. With regard to the Israel-Hamas war, families are pleading for German hostages in Gaza. Relatives of German citizens held hostage by Hamas said that time is, quote, running out, end quote, and urged Berlin to do more to ensure their safe return home. Families of German hostages are calling for more support from Berlin. Relatives of German citizens held hostage by the Islamist militant group Hamas have asked for more support from Germany in a meeting with Bundestag President Bärbel Baas. Germany deems Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip, a terrorist organization, as do the European Union and the United States. Quote, we talked about the fact that we really expect Germany not only to stand on Israel's side and take our side, but to actively act and take a role in this war, Roni Roman, a relative of two hostages, had said. She called on Germany to provide immediate humanitarian aid to ensure that those abducted can receive medical care. Quote, we really need Germany to act quickly. We are running out of time, she said. There are family members we know have been kidnapped, but we haven't known how they are for several weeks. Roman stressed the need to get signs of life from the hostages and bring them back to Germany immediately. Israel's military says that 203 people were abducted by Hamas and brought to Gaza in its attacks in southern Israel on October 7th. Among those held in the territory are several German citizens. Hamas claims nearly two dozen hostages have been killed due to Israeli strikes on the enclave. The German Foreign Ministry has said that there are 8 confirmed cases of German citizens held hostage in the Gaza Strip, and the total was likely a small double-digit number. UEFA announces that no soccer matches will take place in Israel. European ruling body UEFA has decided it won't host football matches in Israel until further notice, quote-unquote. The decision was made after a thorough evaluation of the current safety situation in the whole territory, UEFA had said. UEFA had already postponed the Euro 2024 qualifiers match between Israel and Switzerland, which was scheduled to take place in Tel Aviv. The Israel-Switzerland game had been provisionally rescheduled for November 15. A Europa League game between Villarreal and Maccabi Haifa has been postponed to December 6th, and a Conference League match between Maccabi Tel Aviv and Zorya Luhansk has been postponed to November 25. UEFA asked the Israeli Football Association and its clubs to propose alternative venues, stadiums outside the territory of Israel for their home matches to be used for as long as a decision remains in force. Well, 3,785 people have been killed in Gaza. This is the latest report from 2 hours ago. Hamas has run, this is coming from the Hamas-run health ministry. At least 3,785 people have been killed in Israeli strikes on Gaza since October 7, according to the Hamas-run health ministry in the territory. While the Islamist militant group Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip, is classified as a terrorist organization by the European Union, the United States, Germany, and several other countries, while ministry spokesman Ashraf Al-Khudra said that 1,524 of those killed were children and 1,000 were women. He said that 44 health workers had been killed in Gaza, 4 hospitals were out of service, and 14 basic health care services had stopped functioning. There are no medical stocks in any of the hospitals in Gaza, he said, calling on countries to expedite aid deliveries to the Strip. Also on Thursday, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz pledged to work with Israel to allow aid deliveries into Gaza, a day after he visited Egypt to discuss the establishment of a humanitarian corridor. Well, the Israeli army says that 203 hostages are in Gaza. The Israeli army says that at least 203 people were taken to the Gaza Strip by Hamas fighters. Previously, Israel's military had made estimates of at least 199 hostages. The Hamas militant group killed over 1,400 people in Israel on October 7, abducting many people during the attack, and Hamas is classified as a terrorist organization by the European Union, the United States, Germany, and several other countries. On Monday, Hamas military spokesperson Abu Ubaidah said that the group was holding at least 200 people captive, with 50 others being held by other resistance factions, end quote. He claimed at least 22 hostages had been killed in Israeli airstrikes on Gaza. Netanyahu says that the Hamas attack destroyed the expansion of peace in the Middle East. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, about 3 hours ago, has met with United Kingdom counterpart Rishi Sunak, who is on a visit to show solidarity. Netanyahu said that the October 7 attack on Israel scuttled the expansion of peaceful relations in the Middle East. Quote, "We were on the cusp of expanding that peace, and destroying that move was one of the reasons why this action was taken," end quote, Netanyahu explained. Weeks before the terror attack, Saudi de facto leader Mohammed bin Salman and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu confirmed that their countries got, quote, closer every day, end quote, and that they were, quote, at the cusp of a deal which would be a quantum leap for the region, end quote. Talks on normalizing relations were put on ice following the attacks with Israel's response. Well, the Israeli leader also said that Hamas, quote, are the new Nazis, they're a new ISIS, and we have to fight them together, just as the world, the civilized world, united to fight the Nazis and united to fight Hamas. It must together now stand with Israel. Standing alongside the United Kingdom Prime Minister Netanyahu said that countries needed to work together, quote, in every way possible, end quote, to get the Hamas back from Hamas. Quote, this is our darkest hour, Netanyahu said. Sunak said he wanted to share, quote, the deep condolences of the British people, end quote, and stressed that Britain supported Israel's right to defend itself in line with international law. Well, Sunak said he was aware that Israel was, quote, taking every precaution to avoid harming civilians, in direct contrast to the terrorists of Hamas, which seek to put civilians in harm's way, end quote. Further, Sunak said that the Palestinian people are victims of Hamas too, and that is why I welcome your decision yesterday that you took to ensure that routes into Gaza would be opened for humanitarian aid, Sunak had said. Well, the British Prime Minister concluded by saying, quote, I'm proud to stand here with you in Israel's darkest hour. One second. And this is some latest news. Egypt's El-Sisi is going to host United Nations Chief Guterres, Jordan's Abdullah, for Gaza talks. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres is on his way to Egypt, where he will meet with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Egypt's presence is also due to host Jordanian King Abdullah II. Jordan said the two leaders will discuss ways, quote, to stop the Israeli aggression on Gaza, end quote. On Wednesday, Jordan canceled a four-way summit with U.S. President Joe Biden, el-Sisi, and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas after a deadly blast at a Gaza hospital. In a meeting with United Kingdom Foreign Secretary James Cleverly in Cairo, Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry discussed, quote, the priority of delivering humanitarian and emergency aid to the people of Gaza, according to the foreign ministry. Also on Thursday, el-Sisi discussed the situation in the Gaza Strip with U.S. Central Command Chief Michael Kurilla. His office had said, well, Germany's defense minister is in Lebanon amid the regional tensions. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius arrived in Lebanon on Thursday as regional tensions continued to mount. Pistorius was due to meet German armed forces personnel who are deployed to Lebanon as part of the UNIFIL peacekeeping operation. The German naval corvette Oldenburg, quote-unquote, is conducting patrols of the coastline to prevent arms trafficking. Well, the United Nations peacekeeping mission is also monitoring the border region between Israel and Lebanon. In recent days, there has been a steady exchange of fire between Israel and Hezbollah militants, which began shortly after the Islamist a militant group Hamas, a designated terrorist organization by the U.S., the EU, and other governments, launched a large-scale attack on Israel on October 7. The Iranian-backed Lebanese militant group Hezbollah has since claimed responsibility for a series of attacks on northern Israel. About 5 hours ago, we heard that the European Union interior ministers are meeting to discuss the impact of the Israel-Hamas war. European Union ministers are meeting in Luxembourg to debate how to deal with the impact the Israel-Hamas war is having on security in member states. This follows killings by a suspected Islamist extremist in Belgium and France, and a Molotov cocktail attack on a Berlin synagogue. Quote, we have to address multiple impacts from the continuing crisis in the Middle East, and part of this is to assess all possible consequences for us in the European Union, European Commission Vice President Margaritis Schinas had said. This, quote, this entails the protection of our Jewish communities, but also the protection against a generalized climate of Islamophobia that has no place in our society, he told reporters in Luxembourg, where the meeting is taking place. Well, the IDF refutes the hospital attack allegations, this is from about 6 hours ago, and questioned the death toll figure. Israel Defense Forces on Thursday moved to quash allegations that it was responsible for Tuesday's blast at the Al-Ahli hospital in Gaza. In a morning briefing, the IDF spokesperson Jonathan Conricus used a screen to show footage he said was filmed by Al Jazeera and which he said showed the moment a rocket malfunctioned mid-flight. Conricus said that an explosion could then be observed at the hospital as the rocket falls down and causes an explosion on the ground, end quote, as he pointed out distinguishing features of the hospital. Conricus then showed footage provided by the IDF taken shortly after the blast and said that the rocket had impacted the parking, quote, what I see here are about 15 cars that were affected by the rocket itself. I see remains of fire. What I don't see is bodies, Conricus said, adding, if 500 people were indeed killed here, or 471, which is the latest update from the Hamas-controlled Ministry of Health in Gaza, where were they here? Deutsche Welle had no way of independently verifying the claims made by either side. The IDF has blamed the Palestinian militant organization Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip for the attack, and Islamic Jihad rejected the accusation. Well, the British Prime Minister in Israel says, "I agree with you and stand with you." That's what British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, upon arrival in Israel, said in a show of solidarity following the October 7 Hamas attack. "I am in Israel, a nation in grief. I agree with you and I stand with you against the evil that is terrorism, today and always," Sunak posted on social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter. Sunak said that the Gaza hospital blast on Tuesday that caused mass Palestinian casualties should be a watershed moment for leaders in the region and across the world to come together to avoid further dangerous escalation, adding that Britain would be at the forefront of this effort. Sunak is expected to hold talks with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, after which he is expected to visit other regional capitals. Sunak's spokesperson said that at least 7 British nationals were killed in the October 7 Hamas terror attack, and at least 9 people were still missing. British Foreign Secretary James Cleverly will be meeting leaders in Egypt, Turkey, and Qatar in the coming days to discuss ways of finding a peaceful solution. China says that it's willing to help coordinate stability in the Middle East. China's President Xi Jinping told Egyptian Prime Minister Mustafa Madbouly during talks on Thursday morning that China was willing to enhance cooperation with Egypt and inject more certainty and stability, end quote, into the Middle East. At present, he says, the international and regional situation is undergoing profound and complex changes, and the world is experiencing rapid changes not seen for a century. The Chinese state media reported that Xi as having said that on Thursday. She added that the most urgent task was working towards a ceasefire and stopping the war as soon as possible. There has been a strengthening of relations between China and Egypt, with the latter set to join the BRICS group of major emerging economies next year. Well, U.S. and Egypt strike a deal allowing limited aid into Gaza. That was about 10 hours ago. Limited humanitarian aid is expected to begin trickling into the Gaza Strip on Friday, according to the White House, to White House officials. U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday said that Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi agreed to allow an initial group of 20 trucks to begin aid deliveries. The deal was announced as the U.S. President wrapped up a short visit to Israel in a show of solidarity and a bid to defuse regional tensions. Biden warned that, quote, it will end, end quote, if Hamas confiscated the aid. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office said that Israel will not thwart, end quote, aid deliveries if they were limited to civilians in the south of the Gaza Strip and did not end up in the hands of Hamas militants. Netanyahu's office said the move was approved after a request from Biden. While the statement made did not mention fuel deliveries, which is badly needed for hospital power generators. Gaza's only connection to Egypt is the Rafah crossing, which joins the far south of the Gaza Strip with Egypt's Sinai Peninsula. Egypt has kept the border crossing closed as it was hit by Israeli bombardments in response to the Hamas terror attack on October 7. The Gaza Strip has been sealed off for more than 10 days after Hamas militants launched a terror attack into southern Israel. More than 200 trucks with around 3,000 tons of aid are positioned near the Rafah crossing, according to the head of the Red Crescent for North Sinai, Khalid Zayed. Egyptian Foreign Ministry Minister Samer Shoukry said the supplies would go in under the supervision of the United Nations. In the days following the October 7 attack, Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant announced a complete siege of Gaza. No food, for fuel, or other supplies were allowed into the territory, according to the measure, leaving the people of Gaza facing humanitarian crisis. Well, and so on and so forth. it seems from Germany we hear that a number of German citizens who have fallen victim to Hamas terror is a single digit, a spokesperson for the ministry said on Wednesday, without elaborating. The foreign ministry said it was in close contact with Israeli authorities and would confirm deaths after relatives have been informed. Germany's DPA news agency reported, and Germans are also believed to be among the around 200 people who were taken hostage by Hamas and taken back to Gaza, the DPA agency had reported. The number of German nationals otherwise in the Gaza Strip was at the lower end of three digits, the foreign ministry spokesperson had said. Spokesperson added there was constant exchange with partners in the region to enable those who want to leave to do so. The German Air Force flew another 87 people to Germany from Israel on Wednesday. More than 300 people have been flown to Germany by the Air Force. Another 2,000 have returned home on special flights organized by major German airline Lufthansa. And Hamas is considered a terror group by the U.S., EU, and others, and German leaders have repeatedly said their country stood firmly with Israel. So, unbelievable. One second. Bear with me a moment here. And this is really quite interesting on a different plane, but similar. In The Hague, the defense of the Sudanese war crime suspect begins. Janjaweed leader Ali Abed al-Rahman's defense team is set to make their opening statement on October 19th, that's today. Human rights lawyers say that justice is necessary to end the ongoing conflict in Sudan. An alleged senior commander of the Sudanese Janjaweed militia, Ali Mohammed Ali Abed al-Rahman, also known as Ali Kushaib, has been charged with 31 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity in the International Criminal Court, the ICC, in The Hague. According to Human Rights Watch, quote, the mass rape and killings and other abuses appear part of a widespread and systematic attacks on civilian populations that may constitute crimes against humanity. Crimes against humanity are serious offenses, including murder, torture, and rape, committed as part of a widespread or systematic attack on a civilian population. Ali Husseib is accused of committing a number of crimes between August 2003 and April of 2004, including murder, attempted murder, pillaging, rape, torture, and intentionally directing attacks against the civilian population in the Darfur region of Sudan. The Janjaweed, which has now been rebranded the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, was a Sudanese Arab-dominated militia whose fighters tended to ride horses and camels. In 2003, it was used by the Sudanese army, Arab-dominated government under President Omar al-Bashir, to wage a counterinsurgency campaign against ethnic minority rebels in Darfur, located in western Sudan. Well, the conflict that began in 2003 is estimated to have cost the lives of at least 300,000 people, civilians, and displaced almost 3 million. Witness after witness knew Mr. Abed al-Rahman from before. Abed al-Rahman has pleaded being non-guilty to all charges at the beginning of the trial. In a March 2022 statement, his defense lawyers claimed he was not Ali Husseib, if indeed there had ever been a person of this name. They argued that Abed al-Rahman was an ordinary citizen who had sold medicine at a market after leaving the army in 1990, and that he was listed as a recruit in a central police register in 2005. They implied such a modest person could not be a Janjaweed leader. But in the opening trial in April of 2022, Karim Khan, a chief prosecutor of the ICC, argued that there was a, quote, strong, end quote, case against Abd al-Rahman. Quote, witness after witness saw him, heard him, recognized him, he said. Quote, witness after witness knew Mr. Abd al-Rahman from before, end quote. Before the prosecution phase closed in February 2023, 56 witnesses had appeared in court, which admitted at least 600 participating victims. In April of this year, fighting broke out between the Sudanese armed forces under General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the paramilitary RSF, which was formed by former Janjaweed members and is led by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemedti, further exacerbating the humanitarian crisis in Sudan and the surrounding region. Once again, human rights violations were reported. In a speech to the United Nations Council in July, Khan said that the ICC was looking into, the International Criminal Court was looking into allegations of new war crimes in Darfur. Quote, with respect to the role of my office, I do wish to be very clear that our mandate pursuant to Security Council Resolution 1593 is ongoing. With respect to crimes within our jurisdiction, the crimes of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes, end quote, he said. And further, any individual who is found to be committing those crimes within our jurisdiction will be investigated, end quote. Now, Elise Kepler from Human Rights Watch advised that it is important that the accused be held accountable by the International Criminal Court. Quote, it is usually important, and we know the victims have campaigned to see this and are involved in this case. But the reality is that impunity has been a major force in Sudan and is fueling abuses we see today. Nimat Ahmad, the founder and president of the Darfur Women Action Group, said in a video posted by the ICC on X, formerly known as Twitter, that, quote, accountability was the, quote, most important aspect in this crisis because the people of Sudan have to learn something new. It is about dignity, so let us pursue justice. The International Criminal Court has opened at least 6 cases and issued 7 arrest warrants in conjunction with alleged crimes committed in Darfur, the case of Abd al-Rahman, who voluntarily surrendered to the court in June of 2020, is the only one to have reached a trial so far. Former President Omar al-Bashir is the most prominent of those accused by the International Criminal Court. However, although he and other suspects have spent time in Sudanese custody, they have yet to be extradited. Kepler advised Germany that their whereabouts were currently unclear. Unfortunately, we understand those fugitives are no longer in custody, and there remains an absolute need for them to be transferred to face the charges against them and to see those proceedings go further. Okay. one second. I think that we've covered one second. Oh, yes, I did want to speak about this. A man by the name of Daniel Noboa, is he the hope for Ecuador? The family of Ecuador's new president, Daniel Noboa, made its fortune in the banana trade. The 35-year-old Noboa has hardly any political experience. How does he plan to tackle the rampant violence in his country? Well, Ecuador will soon have the youngest president in Latin America. In Sunday's runoff election, Ecuadorian voters cast their ballots for 35-year-old Daniel Noboa, who is 2 years younger than the Chilean president, Gabriel Boric. previously the great hope of Latin America's social democratic left. Daniel Noboa's father, Alvaro, is a business magnate and the richest man in the country. He too ran for president 5 times without success. Now his son has succeeded on his first attempt. The president-elect previously held various positions at the Noboa Corporation and was elected to the National Assembly in 2021. It came as a surprise when he placed second in the first round of voting. At the start of the campaign, neither the political pundits nor the pollsters thought he had much of a chance. Well, even though lacking experience in parliamentary support, Noboa has little political experience and none at all of running public institutions. He was the chosen candidate of Acción Democrática Nacional, ADN, an electoral alliance of several center-right parties, but his alliance will only have 14 ministers of parliament in the newly elected parliament. The main opposition force will be the left-leaning Revolución Ciudadana party, which is close to securing the 50 seats it won in the first round of voting out of a total of 137, which is a good basis for stable government. Well, Ecuador is also facing huge challenges, according to the media platform Open Democracy. In a mere 2 years, between 2020 and 2022, the murder rate increased by 245%, transforming the country from one of the most peaceful in the region to one of the most violent. Daniel Noboa first came to the attention of the wider public when he appeared in a television debate wearing a bulletproof vest after his political rival, Fernando Villavicencio, was assassinated. Well, conservative program, but what does Noboa actually stand for? Is he really just a spoiled playboy, as he is sometimes portrayed, or can he actually make a difference in a country increasingly mired in violence? Quote, during the election campaign, Noboa himself defined his political orientation as central izquierda, or center-left. Nonetheless, he stands for business-friendly politics and conservative values and can be classified as belonging to the right-wing camp, says Constantin Gore, the head of the Friedrich Ebert office in Ecuador. It is also important to note, he pointed out, that Noboa's vice presidential candidate, Veronica Abad, espouses, quote, openly extreme libertarian and conservative reactionary positions. Gore comments that Noboa avoided appearing with her too often in the election campaign. All the same, she had a not insignificant role as a procurer of votes from the very conservative segment of the electorate. However, Noboa can only hold the office of head of state and government for about 18 months, starting in mid-December. And this is what remains of the term of the incumbent conservative president, Guillermo Lasso, which is due to end in May of 2025. Lasso dissolved parliament on May 2023 after 2 years in office. It had initiated impeachment proceedings against him on charges of embezzlement. Early elections had to be held as a result, and Lasso decided not to run again, partly because of his disastrous standing in the opinion polls. So why did voters decide in favor of another candidate from the right-wing camp, despite their disappointing experience with the incumbent? Noboa's main opponent, Luisa Gonzalez, belongs to the left-wing camp of former President Rafael Correa in office in 2007 to 2017, and Correa was convicted of corruption and now lives in exile in Belgium. Constantin Gore thinks that voters simply didn't trust the left to provide forward-looking solutions for the country. Through his appearance, discourse, and aesthetics, Noboa succeeded in presenting himself during the election campaign as a young and, above all, a new alternative for politics beyond the old entrenched divisions. And this was largely due to a skillful campaign on social media and the avoidance of direct confrontation to its Constantine role. However, Jorge Vicente Paladines, an expert in criminal law and professor at the Central University of Ecuador comments that the very short term in office will severely limit the new president's room to maneuver. 18 months is really too short for him to keep his election promise to significantly reduce the homicide rate and minimize the fundamental problem of insecurity, said Paladines. Well, Constantine Grohl from the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung in Quito shares his fear. Quote, very little about the security situation will change in the short term, he says. Grohl thinks it is likely that the president will try to initiate security policy reforms through referendums. He has already announced one of these during the election campaign. So we will see how this all works out, and we'll be following it through, that is for sure. 8 seconds here. Yes, I have enough time to tell you about this. Evidently, with regard to Indonesia, corruption scandals are escalating as the election nears. It seems that corruption continues to blight Indonesia as President Jokowi nears the end of his second term. Four political figures related to his regime have recently been sentenced for wrongdoing. Indonesia has been hit by a series of corruption scandals whereby several leading officials have been accused of wrongdoing. The latest allegation came against the former Minister of Agriculture, Syahrul Yassin Limpo, and earlier this month, the Indonesian Corruption Eradication Commission, the KPK, arrested Limpo in his apartment in South Jakarta for suspected corruption and extortion while in office. His case is still ongoing. Limpo sparked public debate as he was scheduled to arrive in Jakarta, Indonesia's capital, on October 1st after seeking medical treatment abroad. However, he had been missing for several days and returned after the Nasdam party chairman Surya Paloh urged him to come home. Indonesian President Joko Widodo is in his second and final term. As a result, the Southeast Asian country is expected to face more competitive general elections in 2024. So who else is mentioned in the corruption scandals? Besides Limpo, two ministers and one former minister have also been suspected of corruption in separate investigations. Indonesian Transport Minister Budi Karya Sumadi is being investigated as a witness of alleged bribery over railroad construction and maintenance. Well, meanwhile, Sports and Youth Minister Dito Ariyoteju is said to have accepted 27 billion rupee, that's $172 million, in alleged bribery related to a 4G-based transceiver station, a BTS project. He denied the allegation while on the witness stand in a corruption trial involving former Minister of Communications and Information Technology, Johnny G. Plate. Well, Plate's trial began in June of 2023 and has been charged with alleged corruption over the construction of mobile phone transmission towers in remote parts of the country. His case is still ongoing. Well, there is a lack of due diligence. Zainur Rahman, a researcher from the Gajah Mada University Center for Anti-Corruption Studies, said that the recent scandal could be an indicator of poor due diligence from Widodo, who is more commonly known as Jokowi, during the recruitment process for ministerial candidates. There is no process for assessing the track record, background, and leadership of prospective ministers. Why? Because we prioritize more accommodating the needs of supporting parties and volunteers who supported the president. So the candidate's capacity, integrity, and so on is not being seen as a very important factor. So that's the story for us. Or last few moments. In his second term, Jokowi is known to have accomplished people accommodated people from many political views to work in his ministry, including his rival Prabowo Subianto, and this has left his government with minor and often insignificant opposition. Nevertheless, Rahman noted that political rivals may have played a role in the downfall of the accused, and that's a good thing. It is better for these elites to expose each other instead of covering up for each other, Rahman said. While the archipelagic country is scheduled to hold a general election in February of 2024, some 204 million eligible voters are set to choose their new president and vice president, as well as national and regional parliamentary members. So we'll keep abreast of all this when the time comes. I see we've got to go. Our time is up. So thank you for being with us. Tomorrow is Friday, and hopefully you'll consider joining us then. Be well, and goodbye.